ॐ नमो वासुदेवाय
ॐ नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय
राय नम नमस्कृत नरं शरं नरोत्तमां देवीं सरस्वतीं ध्यासं भोजाय मुदीराय तस्कापरेषु नित्यं भागवत सेवाय भागवती धामश्लोके भक्ति भवति नैष्ठिकी. Reading from the Srimad Bhagavatam, translations and purports by His Divine Grace, A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami, Srila Prabhupada, Chapter 2, The Lord in the Heart, Text Number 1. Shri Shuru Vacha,
Shri Shuru Vacha,
Evam,
Evam,
Puran,
Taranayatma,
Yoni, regained his lost consciousness by appeasing the Lord. Thus he was able to rebuild the creation as it was before, responsibly. Sri Shukadeva Goswami said, formerly,
prior to the manifestation
of the cosmos, Lord Brahma,
by meditating on the Virata Rupa,
Regained his lost consciousness. By appeasing the Lord. Thus he was able.
To rebuild the creation.
As it was before. Report by Srila Prabhupada. The example cited herein of Sri Brahmaji is one of forgetfulness. Brahmaji is the incarnation of one of the mundane attributes of the Lord. Being the incarnation of the passion mode of material nature, he is empowered by the Lord to generate the beautiful material manifestation. Yet, due to his being one of the numerous living entities, he is apt to forget the art of his creative energy. This forgetfulness of the living being, beginning from Brahma down to the lowest insignificant ant, is a tendency which can be counteracted by meditation on the Virat Rupa of the Lord. This chance is available in the human form of life, and if the human being follows the instruction of Srimad Bhagavatam and begins to meditate upon the Virat Rupa, then revival of his pure consciousness and counteraction of the tendency to forget his eternal relationship with the Lord can follow simultaneously. And as soon as his forgetfulness is removed, the Bhavasaya Buddhi, as mentioned here and in the Bhagavad Gita 2.41, follows at once. This ascertained knowledge of the living being leads to loving service of the Lord, which the living being requires. The kingdom of God is unlimited. Therefore, the number of the assisting hands of the Lord is also unlimited. The Bhagavad Gita 13.14 asserts that the Lord has his hands, legs, eyes, and mouths in every nook and corner of the creation. This means that the expansions of differentiated parts and parcels, called jivas or living entities, are assisting hands of the Lord, and all of them are meant for rendering a particular pattern of service to the Lord. The conditioned soul, even in the position of a Brahman, forgets this by the influence of illusory material energy generated out of false egoism. One can counteract such false egoism by invoking God consciousness. Liberation means getting out of the slumber of forgetfulness and becoming situated in the real loving service of the Lord, as exemplified in the case of Brahman. The service of Brahma is the sample of service in liberation, distinguished from the so-called altruistic service, full of mistakes and forgetfulness. Liberation is never inaction, but service without human mistakes. Om Magena Dimananda Sagaranam Jana Salakaya Chaksuran Mudikam Jena Tasmai Sri Gurave Namah Sri Chaitanya Manovistam Tapitam Jena Bhutale Sayam Pakaramayam Dharati Svapranthikam. We were reading about the avatars earlier in the teachings of Lord Chaitanya from the Chaitanya Chaitamrita. And we understand by that reading that the Supreme Lord Krishna is the ultimate cause of all causes and the most potent of all the different forces in the universe, and the most potent of all personalities in the universe. Lord Brahma, who is in the category of the jiva, or living entity, can attain, we read elsewhere in Srimad Bhagavatam, up to 78% of the qualities of Krishna. Lord Shiva can attain up to 84% of the qualities of Krishna, and the various additional incarnations can attain up to 92%, sometimes it is said 94% of the qualities of Krishna. But Krishna, as the original personality, retains the original 100% qualities. So Krishna's position is unique among all others and maintains always the superior position. Even to Lord Vishnu, there's the story of the Brahmin whose sons died before his birth, and Arjuna, being a committed Kshatriya, said that he would retrieve the sons of the Brahmin because the Brahmin had complained to him. This is from the 10th canto of Srimad Bhagavatam. So, in order to retrieve those sons, Krishna, being the parent of Arjuna, took Arjuna to the spiritual sky, and he came to see Lord Vishnu. Lord Vishnu was in his lying down pose, and Lord Mahavishnu, and he said, Lord Mahavishnu, to Krishna and Arjuna, that it was me who actually took away the sons of the Brahmin. Now this was extraordinary, because It was, at that time, that unusual things didn't happen. When I say unusual, I mean things like great droughts and infestations of locusts and pestilence, various types of bad weather. They didn't occur. In fact, Prabhupada is on record as saying that even in Vrindavan, maybe a few hundred years ago, the weather was much better than it is now. Now it is considered to be one of the hottest places in the summer and one of the coldest places in the winter. But that did not exist. Of course, the Goswamis, they were living in a very austere condition and only in loincloths, and sometimes they were shivering due to the cold. But 5,000 years ago, at the end of the Dwarapara, the onset of Kali Yuga, things were not so bad, and things were much more plentiful. We didn't have great industries that we have now, and the attempts to biotech industry to generate all sorts of flowers and fruits and vegetables out of the laboratory by playing with the genetic makeup of various kinds of growths, various things, God-given things. So it was extraordinary that children would die before the father. And for this reason, the Brahmin complained to the ruling Kshatriya Arjuna that this is an unnatural occurrence. So it was thought that the Brahmins should protect all citizens and make things right. There was an instance in this connection when Indira Gandhi was the Prime Minister of India. There was a great drought in Maharashtra. When she came to Mumbai, the biggest city in Maharashtra, many farmers came to the airport. They were upset, and Prabhupada writes that 90%, maybe now it's 80% of the people of India live in villages, and they're farmers, they're cultivators, they're agriculturalists. And they live a kind of simple life. They understand the principle of reincarnation, and they follow many of the rules of Vedic life. So they had this notion that the Kshatriya is supposed to protect them. Kshatriya is always, in tradition, protected. They funded all the other castes, and in particular, the Kshatriyas, the Vaishyas actually funded all the other castes, but the Kshatriyas were to protect, particularly the women, the children, the old men, the cows, the Brahmins. So these villagers who came to greet Indira Gandhi were under the impression that the drought that they were experiencing was a responsibility of the ruling Kshatriyas to see that such things didn't happen. Because there weren't such things as great pestilences and disease and raids of insects and so on. So they came to the airport to blame their prime minister, who was, by their calculation, the ruling Kshatriya. So they came unexpectedly in great accords and began to stone the prime minister. I was in San Francisco at the time, and that was around in 1967. So one friend of ours named Bob, who was an architect, saw this headline about the people, the farmers, stoning, attempting to kill Indira Gandhi by stoning. He rushed into Prabhupada's room, who was in 518 Frederick Street at the time, and said, Swami, your prime minister is being stoned. They tried to kill her. And without missing a beat, Prabhupada looked up and said, oh, very good. Because Prabhupada knew the background, that there was a great drought, and that the villagers, in their simplistic way of following Vedic culture, were blaming the ruling Kshatriya for the land, and they were trying to kill her, actually. So then Prabhupada explained the whole situation to this man, who was very shocked by Prabhupada's reaction. So at that time, the people felt that very protected. Today we feel very unprotected. There could be atomic war at any moment. We don't know what's going to happen. The food we're eating is very polluted. There's violence on the streets. So we're sort of game for the denizens of Kali Yuga to attack us in various ways. And our very life is on a very tottering kind of platform. Whereas when there was division, proper Daivi Varnashram, people felt they were all employed. they weren't worried about going around at night, and everyone felt secure in their lifestyle. So this doesn't exist now, but it existed then. So the point I was going to make was that Krishna took, in his original form, Arjuna, to try to retrieve these dead sons of the Brahman. So the Lord Mahavishnu admitted, he said, yes, I have personally taken these sons, I have killed them, because my motivation was that I wanted to see you, meaning Krishna in his original form. So this is an example of how Lord Vishnu is not in the same position as Lord Krishna. He wanted darshan with Krishna, he wanted to see, he wanted to have face-to-face contact with Lord Krishna, his superior, his great master. So he said, he admits that I wanted to see you, I wanted your darshan, I wanted you to come, and then he returned the dead sons to Brahma. So this is an indication that Lord Krishna is always in the superior position. When in my first or second trip to India, someone dragged me to the movie theater to see the Hari Darshan. It was the story of Prahlad Maharaj. They thought, this is a very spiritual experience. And when at the beginning of this film, it's a little bit of a strange film, a very strange film actually. The incarnations of the Lord appear. They come, there's this form of Vishnu with four hands, and you see the various Leela avatars come out, and Lord Parashuram, Lord Brahma, Lord Balaram, Lord Krishna even comes out of him. And I've never been to an Indian movie theater before. And the people all started to cheer. As soon as they saw Vishnu on the screen, everyone was cheering. And this is their worshipable entity. But we understand that people, although they may have the idea that Lord Vishnu is supreme, it is actually Lord Krishna that is the original, the Adi Purusha, from which all the Vishnu and all the other incarnations come. So this is a common misconception that we find in Vedic culture, along with many other misconceptions, such as the conception that the Brahman is the ultimate realization, or Vishnu is the worshipped. When I first went to London, we used to visit one home. I won't mention their name, but there were people who had what we call a menagerie of deities. They had Lakshmi, they had Ganesh, they had Lord Shiva, and then many different Vishnus, and Chandra, and Indra, they were all there, made of marble, and the walls everywhere, they were decorated with these various deities. So we could understand what Prabhupada meant when he said that there's a misconception that people tend to be very hodgepodge about the Vedic culture, and they don't understand that it's actually monotheistic, there's one supreme being to whom all the others pay their respects and obeisances. We don't worship we don't engage in sacrifice to Lord Indra and the various other demigods. As Krishna pointed out in his Leela of lifting Govardhan, that we actually only have to worship Govardhan or Krishna, because then all the other various demigods are satisfied. And as in any organization or any family, there is one ruling head, and one pays fealty to that ruling head and then becomes very secure and protected. Just like we pay taxes to a government, and the government in exchange is supposed to, of course doesn't do it nowadays very much, but it's supposed to distribute the wealth equally among citizens and protect them and employ them. So that, of course, is proper Vedic culture. So Prabhupada writes that the example cited here in Ramaji is one of forgetfulness. Ramaji's incarnation of mundane attributes of the Lord. Our existence in this world is one of forgetfulness. We're here, we're attracted to material energy because we're forgetful that the original spiritual energy is all attractive. It's very beautiful. It is said in Brahma Samhita that every step is a dance, all water is nectar, every word is a song. But we're forgetful that there is supreme beauty, that the beauty that we see, Prabhupada mentions that the beautiful creation is a very beautiful thing. But its beauty compared to the beauty of the spiritual world is very insignificant, very small, very minute. Just as we see there's a great difference between the length of time that we spend in this material world, or our sense of time compared to the higher planetary systems. One lifetime is like a thousandth of a second for Lord Brahma. And the difference between the existence of Lord Brahma in the spiritual world is even greater than the difference between our sense of time and the sense of time in the higher planetary systems. We can't imagine it. It's just unimaginable. It's explained in Chaitanya Chaitanya that the love between Radha and Krishna grows millions of times every second. But what is more achincha or inconceivable than that? We can't imagine anything growing from even 1 second to the next, what to speak of growing millions of times each second more. So that is the nature of the spiritual world. It's beyond our conception that every step can be a dance, every word can be a song, all water can be an echo. Spiritual world is beyond our imagination, but still there are elaborate descriptions of the spiritual world in the Vedic literature so that we can be get a glimpse or have a glimmer of what the spiritual world might be like. And because we're in a condition of forgetfulness, we have to keep reminding ourselves by hearing constantly. It is very important to hear constantly. Shravanam, Kirtanam, Smaranam. It's the first aspect of the 9 aspects of devotional service. We have to hear. And by hearing regularly, by surrounding ourselves with Krishna consciousness, we become aware that this isn't the natural, normal, peaceful existence for human beings, but the real existence is in the spiritual world. So we have to keep reminding ourselves. We have to keep reminding ourselves that we're not even the body. Even that is very difficult to process, to be in full realizations of. We have to keep reminding. So the example Prabhupada gives sometimes is that the death, which we forget is not the end of everything, is like a kind of term of sleep. It's a night in the human condition. It's a sleep of the term of pregnancy of 9 months. It's a 9 month sleep. Ordinarily we have a 4 hour, a 6 hour, 8 hour, 12 hour. Some people sleep 14, 16 hours. That's a period of absolute forgetfulness. There's deep sleep, sushupti, there's a dreaming condition, svapna, there's the awakened condition, jagarti. So, or jagarti. So we're in a kind of constant stupor in our material existence. We're in a kind of unreal phase of life. Of course, we read that it is not so much that it is unreal, that it is temporary, but it is like unreality. It is like a dream. So we have a daydream, we have a night dream, and this, what we know as death, is actually like a prolonged sleeping condition. And this situation that we're in now is also like a dream. It's like a forgetfulness. And forgetfulness is the condition of being non-Krishna conscious. Complete remembrance is the condition of being completely Krishna conscious. We never forget Krishna for not even 1 second. That's complete remembrance. And forgetfulness is not knowing that we're spiritual beings, that we exist primarily to serve Krishna, and we exist actually in our spiritual bodies in the spiritual world. So this constant remembrance, constant necessity to remind ourselves is essential. In this way, Prabhupada says we should mold our lives to be Krishna conscious. Mold our lives in such a way there should be pictures of, like in the temple, of Krishna everywhere. Incense is always burning, nose is always smelling, the flowers are always available, so we're smelling. We're seeing the pictures, we're hearing the sounds of Krishna all the time, we're playing the tapes. We're eating only Krishna prasad, so we're always tasting Krishna. And in this way, we are meant to remember Krishna at every second. Our lives are dedicated to serving Krishna. And we try to surround ourselves with paraphernalia. We live with devotees. We act in such a way that we're always reminded of Krishna consciousness, and we don't forget. So forgetfulness is material consciousness, and remembrance is Krishna consciousness. When one is perfectly Krishna conscious, when one is in the spiritual world, then one has complete remembrance of everything. We can even remember our past lives. Of course, we don't want to dwell on them, but we're in that state of remembrance. We can remember everything. So even Brahmaji, who is a very powerful living being, gets into the state of forgetfulness. So if even Lord Brahma can forget what to speak of us inferior living entities, certainly we can forget, and we forget at every moment our original position of Krishna consciousness. Being, Prabhupada writes, the incarnation of the passion mode of material nature, he is empowered by the Lord to generate the beautiful material manifestation. Yet due to his being one of the numerous living entities, he's apt to forget the arc of his creative energy. So we are forgetful. And if we're not Krishna conscious at the time of death, which is when we are tested as to how Krishna conscious we are, we will forget Krishna and we'll remember something material. And we'll have to go back into a material kind of life. It may be human, it may be subhuman, it may be superhuman, but it's going to be material if we're not remembering Krishna. What we did for Krishna, and if we're not thinking of Krishna at the time of death, we will definitely not attain Krishna. People become very attached to their family, to their spouses, to their jobs, to their pets, And I think it was one famous materialist, William Randolph Hearst, he had a great publishing empire. He was famous in that he was one of the people who developed the industry of newspapers in the century. And he was corrupt by our standards, by our spiritual standards. Sometimes he would write about things he liked, even though they weren't true. Anyway, he was famous for, at the time of his death, he remembered the brand name of a sled someone gave him when he was a little child. That's what he was remembering at the time of death. So he can't imagine what kind of a birth he must have taken for having remembered nothing more than a sled at the time of death. But people at the time of death are tested. We're all tested. And we think of the thing, like he did, which was most dear, whatever was most dear to us. And in many cases, it can be a canary, it can be a dog, it can be a human, it can be a demigod. But it's very dangerous. Sometimes people remember the water, or some tree or some plant that they were watering throughout their life. So our future is very uncertain. Sometimes people plan, they can plan, they're the architects of their destiny, and they plan what they're going to achieve. But as it's mentioned here, this forgetfulness is very pervasive. It happens at every moment. We're forgetful of our relationship with Krishna. How often are we thinking of Krishna? So it is said, as soon as forgetfulness is removed, the vyavasaya buddhi, which is a phrase in this shloka, vyavasaya is translated as ascertain and buddhi as intelligence. And this phrase appears two times in the Bhagavad Gita. Vyavasaya Nik Buddhi Keha Kurunandana Bahu Shaka Hinantasya Ureyo Vyavasayana. That means that one who is Krishna consciousness has very singular intelligence. Vyavasaya Nika Buddhi Ekeha Ekeha Kurunandana. One is very singular in his consciousness. Bahu Shaka Hinantasya Ureyo Vyavasayana. And one who is not on this path has an intelligence which is many branched, or we call it splayed out. One is thinking about many, many things. When we think of Krishna, we're single, very singular. Our brain, our mind is single-pointed. And when we're not thinking about Krishna, we're thinking about so many other things. Bhogashvaya, prasaktanam, taya prakrita chetasam, vyavasaya mika buddhir, samadho navideyate. That is also in the second chapter of Bhagavad Gita. The same phrase appears, vyavasaya mika. And this verse translates roughly that, for those who are attached to the materialistic way of life, Vogashvarya Prasaktam, to material enjoyment, one will become bewildered by such things, and resolute determination, which is Vyavasaya Nikabudir, will not take place in the mind of such a person. Resolute determination for devotional service will not take place in the mind of one who is not Vyavasaya Nikabudir, whose intelligence is not single-pointed. The Christian equivalent of this verse is that it is more difficult for a wealthy man, a rich man, to go to heaven than for a camel to pass through the eye of a needle. Bhogashvaya prasaktanam. One who is enamored by material things, and generally people who are very famous or very wealthy, very prominent in society, they're very attached to material things. And so it is very difficult. We were seeing a bit of the Avacharan video last night. And a very wealthy man comes to, you know the story, Gaurakishore Das Babaji. And Gaurakishore Das says, what is this man? He was proposing, I have a very nice place, you can come and live with me. And we've heard from other devotees that he made a proposition to Gaurakishore Das Babaji, who was living as a great renunciate, living on the other side of the tree, the people where people use their pastoral and fast water. And you know, you've been to India, you've seen there's places like this near the Hutments where the stench is very, very bad. So Gaurakishore isolated himself. He lived on the other side of this part of the city, of the town, so that people wouldn't come and bother him. He was a great ascetic, a great vairagi, tyagi. So this wealthy man somehow came to him. He braved the difficulties of going through the latrine area. And he proposed that, yeah, you come and live with me, I have a very nice house. He wanted to have a pet guru. And Gaurakishore rejected him. Actually, what he said was, I'm very happy. I don't have any care. I don't have to worry about pounds and shillings and rupees or whatever. This man was worried about his business and all his employees and his competitors. and his market share. He said, no, just come and live with me. Why should I go live with you? Come and live with me. I'm just going to be very comfortable. You'll be very happy. So Gopi Shore had a great sense of humor. He asked the wealthy man to come and live under a tree. And this man ran away. He was horrified. He'll live under a tree, no way. He wanted Gopi Shore to come and live with him. So he was fixed in his Krishna consciousness. And it's very difficult for such a person to think of becoming a vairagi, a tyagi, a renouncer, a sannyasi. It's horrifying, actually. It's terrifying. Even